Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy. Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings. How are y'all doing today?
Oh, it's been one of those horrible days. Total pain in the ass. Everything going wrong. Everything coming at once. It sucks. Oh, no. Life sucks, God damn it.
Sorry to hear,
one
man.
Shitty day. Yep. Oh, my God. It's just brutal. Brutal. Too much crap to do, not enough time to do it, and everybody wants everything done at the same time.
That is true. That's the way it goes.
Yep. But we forge ahead.
Yes. How's that Evil 3 coming along?
It seems pretty good. Everyone was very excited about the new selection of hops that we chose this time. Mm-hmm. They were saying that it seemed really good. They were cool. real pleased. So that will be ready. Just a couple more weeks.
Excellent.
Yep. Are you going to be around for that, or are you on the road again?
I'm on the road quite a bit. I've got next week. I go to Minneapolis. We'll look at to work on with scientific societies on my new position. As editor for MBAA. Mm-hmm. And the week after that, I pop off to Denver to do some video, some photos and video for the next edition of How to Brew, which is coming out May, June this year. Mm-hmm. And then immediately after that, I fly I'm flying up to San Francisco and then down to San Luis Obispo and then driving up to Paso Robles for the Northern California MBAA conference, mm-hmm. District conference. So it's I originally had scheduled to fly into San Luis like at 11:30 at night, but then found out all the rental car agencies are closed. Mm. So had to move it back a couple hours earlier to be able to get a car.
Yeah, pretty much everything out there is closed at night except for bars and restaurants.
Yeah, they roll up the sidewalks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bet you Blickman lives in an area where there's not much late at night.
That's true. That's how he got into home brewing, I think.
Right. If you want a drink, it's probably not available after like 7 p.m. And probably nothing on Sundays.
Oh, that's true. You told me a good story about that once. So you have to have ID, and you can only you can't have like an underage person with you or a person with you when you buy that doesn't have ID. They squawk at that.
Huh. So you just tell them to wait outside, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Duck down in the car. Yeah.
Oh, that was his wife, so he said, this is silly.
his underage wife?
Yeah.
Did he marry, like, a 14-year-old? I wouldn't put that past John Blickman.
Well, the clerk apparently thought she was underage.
There you go. Our good friend John Blickman, he's out in God's country. And he's making God's gift to the homebrew equipment. Always using that noggin of his to come up with interesting and creative, fun ways of improving your brew day, lots of new equipment. Always a cooking there at Blickman Engineering. And our good friend John Blickman has been paying for this show, so you don't have to, for a long, long time. So the least you could do is go and check out BlickmanEngineering.com. Send a nice email to feedback@BlickmanEngineering.com. Tell them how much you appreciate that they support the show, so you get this show for free. Anyways, check them out, BlickmanEngineering.com. All right, so today we thought we'd do another Q&A show. About yeast. You guys seem to have a lot of yeast questions, so we gathered together another selection of your yeast questions, and we thought we would go over them today to answer those questions.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
Maybe attempt.
Attempt.
To answer those questions.
We will give it the old college try.
That's right.
There it is.
All right. Pornographic Steven.
All right.
First question.
Now, is this going to be multiple choice or?
Is it A?
It might be.
Just give up? Is it two?
Mm-hmm. You said the old college try. That immediately put me in mind of multiple choice questions.
Is that what?
Can we phone a friend? Like,
yeah, really.
Should we call Blickman on some stuff?
We can roll some dice. I don't know.
All right. This one's from Kevin Jones. He says, "Hey guys, I brew mostly high gravity beers, which is 1.080 and higher. As he moves towards opening a nanobrewery, I'm trying to think of the best way to save money on yeast. It's always been my understanding that the yeast left over from high gravity beers is too stressed out to reuse. One of your old podcasts that I was listening to the other day said that this may still be possible if I made a starter with that yeast and only pitched from one batch to the next of the same beer. You talked about selective pressure. Is this really a good idea? If not, do you have other ideas on how to save money on yeast without a yeast bank or buying a propagation tank? Thanks."
Well, if you're worried about saving money on yeast, then I would question your viability of opening a brewery and doing well. First off, maybe your pricing on your product needs to be higher or something. I don't know. And a lot of times people think, "Oh, I'll just grow my own yeast." Properly propagated yeast is not that much cheaper than buying it from somebody like White Labs or Y Yeast. So sometimes people think that you can prop yeast real cheap, but it's one of those things where you got a bunch of ingredients, you got time, you got the tank, you got everything, all the cleaning, the energy, all that goes into it. Mm-hmm. And then you may not end up with as good a product. So I don't know that you really want to be propping your own yeast necessarily. And then if you want consistent performance, it's maybe again, you don't want to prop your own yeast for that reason. I would say, though, that you can repitch yeast from high-gravity brews. Really, the most important thing, I think, is the initial health of the yeast going into fermentation, where you've maximized their ability to withstand, the high concentrations of alcohol. So you've got your zinc, you've got oxygen, you've got all the appropriate micronutrients that the yeast need, and you're treating them properly before going into this high gravity environment. The alcohol gets high, and then when you select the yeast, if you get them out of the high gravity environment and treat them right, then they should be able to do multiple batches, I think. I don't think you necessarily have to start a pitch every time you brew. I think you could mm-hmm. repitch that. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, John?
Yeah. Um, I think you've hit the main point, is that you need to prepare yeast for high gravity brewing and repitching with zinc additions, new treat additions, when you're building them up or initially pitching them. Maybe pitch them to a intermediate wort, depending on how long you intend to store them between batches. I think, he said he doesn't want to build a yeast storage tank or, propagation tank. And he says he wants to brew mainly high gravity beers. An option would be to have a lower gravity beer, something, 1050, 1060-ish, that would be a beer that he could harvest yeast from, say. And that's, if you look at Stone, that's kind of how they, propagated their yeast. They harvested all their yeast from their, lower gravity IPA beer, beer, and then use that yeast for all the higher gravity beers. The other option for him is dry yeast. Dry yeast is, less expensive than large pitches from Y Yeast or Y Labs. A lot of people winning medals with GABF with dry yeast beers these days. And when I say a lot, I mean a dozen. That I know of at the last competition. So,
Only problem with dry yeast is the biggest problem with dry yeast is the lack of selection. What you want to brew is available as a dry yeast, you can certainly go that route, but it's not. You're not going to be able to do. All the different yeasts that you like to do.
Right, right. Yeah, there is that, limitation of selection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, the key thing is going to be making sure you got proper nutrition up front so the yeast are at maximum health, and then, get them out of that environment, when you can, as soon as you can, properly. And then... make sure to provide them their proper nutrition again. Like you're saying, if you brew a bunch of smaller beers, then it's not much of an issue. But yeah, I guess if you're selling the beer outside the brewery, then having everything high gravity is not necessarily the end of the world. But if you're doing your own tap room, you got to have something lower. You'll sell a lot more, and the customers will be much happier with a low gravity beer offering, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Variety. Yeah. Some options.
And people like to, they like to have one, and then, if something special, and then just go to a regular drinker is what I see. All right, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of your questions right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high-temperature March pump, and either a top-tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The BrewEasy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller, and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new Brew Easy.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. morebeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. Morebeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to morebeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Hey guys, what'll it be?
I'm not sure. What do you recommend?
A lot of people seem to like the Hefeweizen.
Is that a German Hefeweizen or more of an American-style wheat beer?
I'm not sure, but I can give you a taste.
Okay, great.
Great.
The Cicerone Certification Program certifies and educates beer professionals in order to elevate the beer experience for consumers. Unfortunately, not every bar is staffed with certified beer servers who can guide their customers through a beer list.
Here you go, guys. Let me know what you think of the Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely more of an American wheat. But I can hardly tell because this beer just smells like sour butter. I wonder how long it's been since they cleaned the draft lines.
Yeah, and look at the bubbles on the side of the glass. It's filthy.
Somebody should tell these guys about the Cicerone program.
For sure. How about we head somewhere else for another beer?
Your server should give beer the same respect you do. Request quality. The Cicerone Certification Program offers 4 levels of beer certification, in-person classes, and course books for beer professionals. Check them out at Cicerone.org. The Cicerone Certification Program. We know beer.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. I don't know. You know, we're talking about yeast. And did you know how many unique and awesome yeast strains Whiteland has?
A lot. A whole bunch.
So much.
So many. How do you decide which one to use? Well, if you go to the Whiteland site, go to their bank, their yeast bank, they have a great new search feature that allows you to browse their entire selection. You can specify various parameters that you want to search on the yeast. It'll pop up all the yeast that'll fit. Let's say you want to make a wit beer or something. You can type in wit beer, and it'll show you all the yeast that would be appropriate for making a wit beer, or even some that are like a little bit outside the norm. And then, you know, you've cut your list down considerably, and it's real cool. And then you can see, like, attenuation. You can see their notes and tasting notes and things like that. And it's just a quick search from their yeast bank. So you go to whitelabs.com/yeastbank to try it out, and you get a chance to pick the perfect yeast for your next brew. So check it out. All right, what's our next question, pornographic Stephen?
This one is about oxygen at 12 hours. On the December 19th, 2016 podcast, Jamil recommended hitting a big beer, approximately 1.084-ish, with a shot of oxygen 8 to 12 hours into fermentation. Do you recommend this as an alternative to making a starter or in addition to a starter? Especially important when you have pitch a starter, or just something you should always do regardless of whether you pitch a starter? Thanks, Rod.
Well, way back in December of 2016, I was doing a lot of heroin, so I'm not really sure I was speaking clearly.
Kind of strung out. And
I was strung out.
Oh, okay.
Now I've cut back to...
Glad
you know,
new year, new you.
Yeah. Way dialed it back.
Glad you're back.
That is not a replacement for a starter. It's not, it is something you always do on bigger beers. So you still need the nice healthy starter. You still need, you know, oxygen at the beginning. You need all those various things. What this extra dose of oxygen does is, help build up the cells to handle the higher gravity ferment, the higher alcohol levels that are coming. So it helps keep those cell membranes more, you know, pliable and more able to handle the stress of the high alcohol environment.
Mm-hmm. You're giving that that first generation of yeast growth, you know, additional resources so that you get stronger reproduction, you know, during the adaptive phase and high growth phase.
We all want higher reproduction. I mean, really.
Yes.
Who doesn't?
Stronger reproduction, in fact.
Stronger reproduction. I like to reproduce strongly.
Yes, vigorously, for extended periods of time, et cetera.
We do a new show called Reproduce Strong, huh?
There you go.
Ah, yes. Well, and I know a lot of times people kind of freak out about that, adding additional oxygen, you know, once everything's right. fermenting, because that's one of the things we're told is, oh, no. Once it's fermenting, you don't want to add any oxygen because then it's, right. you know, staling and all that. But with enough active yeast in there, you can add oxygen, and it's surprising. They take it up, and you don't get any off flavors that I've ever noticed. Yeah. In fact,
well, the other part of the thing is the time at which you're adding it. You know, mm-hmm. 8 to 12 hours in, you know, they're still actively, you know, in their adaptive phase, and so they haven't produced a lot of alcohol that could be oxidized into off flavors and so on. So yeah, it's gonna be rapidly taken up. Mm-hmm. You know, 36 hours, 48 hours into fermentation. No, then you're going to start having some you know, off effects.
Now, when I do this, I don't use the same full amount of oxygen that I use before pitching. I actually scale it back, and I'll do about a third to a half of what I normally do. So that was always just kind of a gut feel thing. Mm-hmm. I don't have any necessarily scientific proof of right. that one, but
no side by side. So
no, it's always just work for me. So there you go. I don't know. Yep. I'm guessing on that one. That is my studied opinion of what it might be. All right. Next question.
This one just says, question for Jamil and John. Could you guys give some pointers on the show in regards to repitching yeast? I've only done it 4 times now, but each time the yeast I've thrown out some off flavors, mainly acetaldehyde. His process is, when kegging, I leave a half inch or so of beer on the yeast cake, swirl it up, collect it in the sanitized mason jar, and leave the jars in the fridge with the lid on loose until my next brew day. I use the Mr. Malty yeast calculator to determine how much I pitch and let the yeast warm up to fermentation temperature for a few hours before pitching. I used some second-generation Koenig yeast that had been in the fridge for approximately 4 weeks, and the off flavors were so severe, I ended up dumping the whole batch. The last few times I've done it with LP001 and 002, the yeast were pitched 5 to 6 days after harvesting. Much cleaner ferments, but still not as clean as my experience with first-generation yeast and a yeast starter. Is 5 to 6 days still too long? Should I still be making a starter to refresh the yeast? What else can I do to ensure the yeast are happy? If you recommend yeast rinsing instead of leaving it on the beer, should I use distilled water or acidified tap water? Lots of questions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think one factor could be the leaving the lid on loosely. The yeast, you know, are going to, you know, have exposure to oxygen in the fridge, you know, even though it's cold. And they will be living off their glycogen and trigulose reserves in that time, which would leave them kind of depleted going into the next fermentation. That could be the reason for higher acetaldehyde If they're going into the next fermentation in a nutrient depleted state, because he did say that the yeast that had been stored the longest had the worst off flavors. What are your thoughts, Jamil?
Well, a couple of things. One would be, usually when there's a green apple character in a beer, it's from, kind of incomplete fermentation at the end. That's probably the most common. And when that happens, a lot of times it's because somebody's fermenting just in kind of an ambient. They'll go, I'm fermenting at, 65 because the room's 65, and they're not controlling the actual fermentation temperature, the temperature of the beer. And so what happens is, the yeast starts slowing down, and then, the room's too cold, and, it crashes the yeast before the yeast are able to clean up after themselves. So you see that a lot of times. Or sometimes if you pitch too much yeast, it'll go ripping along, and then the whole thing crashes before, cleaning up. That's a common problem with too much yeast. It could be, temperature, where you're running the whole thing at a much higher temperature, and that's an issue.
Yeah.
But, what makes me think, since he's saying the one that sat 4 weeks was really strong, I'm wondering if it's truly acetaldehyde or if it is perhaps some sort of contamination, some sort of souring bacteria or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know for sure without actually tasting the beer. But that a lot of times when there's kind of a tart character, some people will think of that as, kind of the green apple. And if that's the case, and the longer it sat there, the more bacteria were growing in his harvested yeast, the higher that would be in that beer. So I was thinking that could be a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be.
So I'd say that's one thing to watch out for. And, just in general, when you're talking about repitching yeast and advice on repitching yeast, the hardest thing on repitching yeast, and a lot of times people worry about all the other little aspects of it as to like, oh, do I have, X number of mils exactly of yeast, or, how am I determining how much yeast to use? And they worry about, various pitching rate calculators and things like that. The most important thing is harvesting healthy yeast. Not just any yeast, but you gave your yeast, so the nutrition you give your yeast before a batch, people think that that's all just for that batch of beer. It's not. It's actually nutrition for the next batch, in a way. The yeast that you're going to harvest is going to be healthier, more vital, more viable, and that's going to assist with the second batch that you do. So that's one of the things on harvesting yeast, repitching, is you got to make sure that the beer you're harvesting from, the yeast were healthy on that.
Yeah.
And then you need to make sure that the method that you're using for harvesting, and that all the vessels and the openings on, whatever container, or if you're using hoses or whatever, that all that is sanitary, that you're not introducing bacteria or wild yeast. You've got to watch out about, contamination from the air, all these things, so that, when you harvest it, you got to worry about your initial pitch as well. Again, the batch before, was that clean? Did you introduce contamination there? Because that's going to grow in that beer. And then if you're harvesting that yeast, you're letting it sit for 4 weeks, it's growing, the bacteria is growing there and the wild yeast is growing there, and then you pitch that in the next one, and you're just increasing and increasing and increasing your bacteria and wild yeast. So you need to be careful of that. You want to just make sure that you know, you're doing everything in a sanitary method. That's why a lot of times, you know, some of the yeast folks will frown upon repitching yeast because, well, people aren't handling it right. And so the quality of their beer drops the more they repitch. And so I would say that those are the things to worry about. Mainly the foremost things, nutrition, sanitary handling. And then it's, you know, yeah, if you stored your yeast for, you know, more than a few days or a week, you really should, you know, make a starter, get it woken up, you know, and it also, the starter helps separate out the dead yeast from the healthy yeast. The dead right. yeast will all be on the bottom. The healthy yeast should be pretty much all in suspension. And so that gives you just a way of isolating out, you know, not throwing in a bunch of dead yeast into your beer and ended up with all the off flavors from the dead yeast. So that's one of the reasons to do that. But it also, you know, validates that you have some healthy yeast there. You could put a pitch of yeast away, and certain yeasts will be 99% dead in 2 weeks. Some yeast, they'll be fine 4 weeks out. Just depends on the strain, the nutrition that they got before they went into storage, you know, how they've been stored, all that will have an effect as well. So I think those are some of the aspects of, you know, repitching yeast. If you're going to rinse it, you can use distilled water. You can use tap water. Just make sure it has been, you know, boiled and it's, you know, clean. I think, you know, either generally is fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anything else to add to that, John, about repitching?
No, I think you covered it real well.
All righty. Well, and that Craft Brew, their Catalyst fermenter, they got that covered pretty well, I'd say. They're using a plastic that is 90%. I don't have my notes in front of me.
Very scratch resistant.
It is. I don't want to misspeak here. Yes, 90% more scratch resistant than other plastic conicals. 71% less oxygen permeable. Low profile design. It's lightweight, snugly fit in your fridge or right on your countertop. They've got this stand that you know, makes it nice and compact and easy to move. Cleaning's a breeze because the entire top of the thing snaps off, so you can get into to clean that thing properly. And instead of using like a carboy brush that'll scratch things up, you can use a nice soft sponge. And the great thing is it's got that big 3-inch butterfly valve on the bottom. You can screw a mason jar on there. Talking about harvesting and repitching yeast, makes it super simple. You can sanitize the valve, you know, get your sanitized mason jar, screw that on there, open the valve, let that yeast dump out into there. Close it up, and, you know, a nice way of transferring your yeast without using hoses or any of that stuff or tilting things upside down. And it'll take any size mason jar. You can use that to dump trub. You can use that to harvest yeast. Pretty slick. And then just loosely put a lid on there, put it in the fridge, and you're good to go. And one of the things about this is I believe it'll handle up past boiling temperatures. So you could actually pasteurize this thing. Even if you did get a bunch of scratches in it, you could, you know, heat it up and not have to worry about
burn the hell out of it.
Sanitary. Right.
That's neat.
Yeah. And you can learn more at craftabrew.com. All right. Let's take a short break. When we come back, more of your questions right after this.
If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
BN Army, have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts, monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y-Yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters, this is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever so subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn the cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
First Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer?
They make beer.
Watch out! Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
The Vault, created by White Labs. The Vault is a collection of new, creative, and unique yeast strains from around the world. These strains have never been available to homebrewers. Most have not even been available to professionals. You have the power to release the yeast. Through The Vault, White Labs is giving you the power to decide which strains are put into production and giving you the opportunity to brew with these strains. Visit whitelabs.com/thevault and pre-order the yeast strain of your choice and encourage your friends to do the same. Once 250 pre-orders have been achieved, White Labs will put that strain into production. The strain will be mailed directly to your doorstep, ready to make the beer you've always wanted to brew. This program was created with the homebrewer in mind. White Labs is relying on you to help release these strains, which may blaze the way for future new and unique beers. Help release the yeast. Visit whitelabs.com/thevault.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
John?
Yo.
Do you like to save money on beer, food, and brewing supplies?
Yes. But I also like to get top quality when I purchase them.
Well, I'll tell you how you can do that. You can check out the new AHA Brew Guru app.
Oh, yes.
And that's going to lead you to all the homebrew shops and pubs and breweries and all that around you. I mean, it's got a little mapping thing where, you know, just like Google searching, but this is based off of the Brewers Association database. So you get kind of, you know, the killer data. And one of the things that you get out of this that you can't get off of Google is which ones have an AHA discount.
There you go.
So that's how you can save some money. You go on, you can go to these places that are giving the AHA discount and save yourself quite a bundle as an AHA member. And that Brew Guru app, that's just another member benefit. You can download it for free even if you're not a member, and you can give it a whirl to see what it looks like. But if you're a member, you get that those discounts. You get the Zymergy magazine. You get you know, the member rallies. You get a whole ton of great stuff, including you know, you can you know, if you go to the Homebrewers Conference, you essentially need to be a member for that. Same thing for the JBF member session. You can get into that as well. So. Lots of benefits for being a member and using the Brew Guru app. So you can download that at the App Store. You can get that from the Google Play Store. And it's for the iPhone and Android devices. So check it out. Brew Guru from the AHA at homebrewersassociation.org. All right. Next question, Mr. Steven.
This one is about decoction versus sparging at higher temperatures. I'm looking at improving my German wheat beers.
That doesn't sound like a yeast question, but that's fine. I don't know how that one got in there.
Yeah, you know, but it's a question.
That's a question.
I mean,
yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, try reading it again.
Okay, here I go. I'm looking at improving my German wheat beers. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference in my beer with using a decoction on modern modified malts, but would a sparge at high boiling temps have a similar relationship to a decoction? Is the tannin issue...
Are you reading all the words that are there? In the sequence
that
they are
written? Because I haven't really... Paraphrased, it's really hard to... I don't know what he's really saying.
Don't paraphrase. Just read the whole thing.
You just give me shit for reading the whole thing.
No. I was giving you shit for the fact that I couldn't understand anything of what you were saying.
Because I can't understand a lot of what you're saying.
I'm trying to translate.
It's not going well.
It didn't make any
sense.
Hold on,
Beverly. I'm sorry. That
it didn't make any sense.
There you go.
It's okay.
You may speak.
I was just making fun of you. I was just saying, sound it out.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just silencing you now.
That's me.
Use your words.
See you later.
You're not...
Ooh.
I was just saying, don't try and paraphrase. Because it's coming across as incomprehensible.
Is the tannin issue wouldn't be as bad as some make it out to be?
Here.
You just want... Here. Just take it.
Carl from New Zealand writes, Team, a question for the Brew Strong Hour. I'm looking at improving my German wheat beers. I agree, in the last cast, I wouldn't be able to tell a difference in my beer with using a decoction on modern modified malts. So we had done a show on decoction, and he says in the last cast, podcast,
correct.
Abbreviation for podcast.
The last podcast, he agrees with you.
Yes, he agrees with us and says, you know, he's not going to be able to tell a difference. And actually, it's kind of funny because... It says, in my beer with using a decoration on modern modified malts. So that kind of does throw you off as you're reading it. I know he meant decoction, but...
Yeah, and I said decoction.
Right, well...
Because I knew he meant decoction.
Yeah.
So should I have said decoration?
You didn't even notice that it said decoration there.
But he could be a loyal Adam and Eve customer.
He could. Modern modified malts. But would a sparge at high/boiling temperatures have a similar relationship to a decoction? Is the tannin issue wouldn't be as bad as to make it out to be? Okay. Is it possible the tannin issue that many have spoken about would not be as bad as some have made it out to be?
Okay.
The tannin issue
He's
with...
thinking there's an issue.
With sparging at high temps, boiling water, etc., etc. He says, I haven't tried it, but I am keen to hear if there are any advantages at all and when. If sparging at higher temperatures than the average 76 degrees C is ever appropriate. Is there a time when high sparge temperatures are appropriate?
No.
No. John says no. So, one of the advantages to decoction is when you're boiling the mash, it helps free up, liberate more starches. The better your crush and the better modified your malt is and the better it is at taking up the water, the less benefit you get out of the decoction. That's all right. That is really happening. One of the reasons that you don't get a tannin issue, I think, with decoction is the pH is still high enough. When you sparge, the pH tends to start dropping.
Starts to rise throughout the course of your sparge.
Oh,
right.
And you run into a difficulty where towards the end of sparging, there isn't enough buffering left in the grains to keep an appropriate pH level. And that's when the tannins can be extracted. That's why high temps early on. I imagine you could sparge with fairly hot water early on and not really see a tannin problem. And you might slightly improve your extract. Wouldn't you think, John?
Yeah. That is true. I don't know how much real gain there is in that regard.
Probably next to nothing.
Right. The one other reason that the temperature of 170, 175, max for sparging is called, if you read Kunze, he also talks about the fact that you're looking for residual alpha amylase to convert any of those starches that you free up, in the course of sparging, and as that temperature rises, you want to convert those starches to fermentables, or at least convert them to sugars. If you were to sparge with boiling water, you would, denature those and, any remaining alpha amylase and potentially end up with this extracted starch going into the beer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another caveat for why you wouldn't want to simply just raise your sparge water temperature. And then going back to our other discussion of decoction, the other thing you're trying to do is generate some melanoidin character with the boil. And you're really not going to get much melanoidin generation simply by running hot water through the grains. It's the boil of the wort of the grains in the decoction that's going to generate those Maillards.
Well, that's the theory.
Yeah.
But I think you get just as much in the boil in the kettle as you're getting
right,
in the separate decoction.
Yeah, and so I think we touched on that also. A 90-minute boil could equal a 30-minute decoction plus a 60-minute boil.
Right.
In terms of beer flavor.
Well, especially because, you know, when you do a decoction, you pull a portion of the mash. You don't do the whole thing because, again, you denature all your all your enzymes. So you pull a portion, you boil that, and then you throw that back in. So you're doing these little small batches versus when you boil the liquid, the whole beer, you've got the, you know, the whole volume that you're working with.
Right.
So I think it's more effective than a small decoction pulled to the side.
Good point.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on decoction while we're talking about yeast? I don't know. That my bad. I slipped that one in there by mistake. I thought they were all about yeast. What can I say?
It was Steve's fault. You can say that.
Just throw me under the bus. I'm ready.
All right.
My body's ready.
Get ready. I'll throw you under the bus. Another question?
Yep.
Time for one more?
Hello, asshats. I brewed a fresh
hopped
pale.
Yeah, you could have paraphrased that part.
I was. I brewed a fresh hopped pale, and it looked kind of gray after a month in the keg, and I thought it was strange, but blamed it on the fresh hops. A month later, I brewed a Northeastern IPA, and it was really hoppy. My brewing partner and I decided to let it age and drop out some of the hops, because it was too hoppy. My keg was very hazy and citrusy, but a few weeks later, it has a gray hue as well, especially in the head. I wonder if you had any explanation. Attached picture. And it's, look at all that gray.
Yes. No, he sent a color picture. I printed on a black and white printer. Yeah, really what you're seeing there is it looks to me, you know, more like, I don't know, yeast or something in suspension is really what it looks like. It could be, you know,
low flocculation.
Yeah, or it could be, you know, just a polyphenol protein complex, haze. You know, haze mm-hmm. in there. It's just, I think a trick of the light. It's, yeah, it's something that's real light in color. And then, you know, if your lights are like fluorescent or, you know, compact fluorescence or something like that, they tend to give everything, you know, you can have a fairly blue artificial light.
Yeah.
And it makes... you know, it's just you end up with you know, kind of a gray looking haze from things that are white. You know, that's one of the things, like on red beers, if you look at them under like a blue light, they tend to look real brown through a lot of that artificial light. So I think it's just that. I don't think it's anything unusual. I mean, I see lots of murky beers that look that route. I would just suggest maybe he starts, you know, working with finings and lets things settle out and tries along those routes. I mean, nothing wrong with clear beer. And then they wouldn't look gray.
That's a good idea. I wonder if, since he said it was an IPA, I wonder if he's trying to do... an East Coast IPA recipe with some extra oats or starches or something in there.
Well, that's what he's saying the second one was.
Ah, okay. That's very well the cause then.
Right. So it's just super hazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just gets kind of that gray look under certain light. I'm sure if, you know, you move it out to a different light, go outdoors with it or something, it wouldn't look quite as... quite as dingy and drab. I just bought something from Williams Brewing the other day.
Oh, what'd you buy?
What was it? Oh, I got one of those InnerTap forward-sealing beer faucets with the interchangeable spouts.
Oh, yes. Those are nice.
Yeah, I had not tried the latest iteration of those, and I'm getting ready to put another, like, 38 taps in our tap room. And I'm like, I haven't been that thrilled with the Perlix, to tell you the truth. The forward ceiling stainless Perlix, they were they leak, like, horribly. Ah. And so they stopped making them. They actually just came out with a new version. Because I guess so many people complained. So the new one might be fine, but these inner taps, they sell for about half the price. And they seem pretty nice. So I got one and hooked it up in the tap room, and I'm waiting to see the feedback from daily use for a few weeks and see what my people say. And see, so far, I used it the other night, and it looked it worked nice for me. I was pleased, and it seemed real solid. Poured real well. But Williams Brewing has them. They have the full line of Intertap forward ceiling beer faucets and at the best price. Because, you know, I'm cheap and I Google the prices. And they have the best price on those with the interchangeable spouts. You can screw off the spout and screw on like a stout faucet without changing your faucet. You just, the spout changes. Pretty cool, huh?
That is. That's pretty innovative.
You can screw on a growler filler. Huh?
And I know you like screwing growler fillers.
I love screwing anything. As well as they've got a new grain mill motorizing kit that features a gear motor that turns the mill at the proper 180 RPM without belts. They've got a Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump, starts at only $69.99, does a job of pumps costing twice as much. They've got the Brewer's Edge mini regulators, as well as their line of King kegs and disconnects. They got quality all steel bottle cappers from Italy, their own line of hydrometers, California wine kits, much more. They've got a ton of stuff. They've got fresh ingredients. They've been doing this since 1979, and they got some of the best customer service in the business. Check them out, williamsbrewing.com, to browse their selection. Their website is pretty nice, too. Works a treat. It's pretty snappy, even on when I look at it on my phone. And like I said, good pricing and good people. I get that stuff out to you quick, and check it out. If you're looking for faucets, I would give the Intertaps a whirl. The only negative I saw on the internet, somebody said, oh, they're not, you know, machined very well or something like that. You know, they seem like poorly made. Not the one I got. It looked pretty sharp. Of course, I got the stainless one. And all stainless, forward ceiling, and it looked, you know, high-end to me. I was very pleased. So I'm thinking I'm going to buy 37 more of them. So there you go. All right. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we will wrap up with Q&A about yeast after this.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out, or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Home Brewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from thebrewingnetwork.com.
To brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right. I think we got time for squeezing one more quick one. And if you're listening live, you can stay tuned, and we've got another two shows coming.
Yep.
So
sweet.
There you go.
Found the lost yeast question.
A lost yeast question, yes.
Yeah, it's in my pants.
Is it about lost yeast in your pants?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you that a lot of yeast gets lost in your pants.
It does. That's why I found it. All right. How to calculate the last third of fermentation? Hello, I see some of your recipes from the BYO and Brewing Classic Styles that say to ramp up the temp by the last third of fermentation. Like, for example, your dry stout recipe has an original gravity of 1.041, a final gravity of 1.010. Now I think to get the last third of that, you do 41 minus 10 equals 31 times 0.33 equals 10 plus 10 equals 1.020. So have I calculated it right?
Yes, I would say that that is correct. However, so a lot of times people don't want to take samples, gravity samples, and it depends on so many different things. I mean, that is correct, but generally, you can have a faster fermentation start, slower at the end, a lot of different things. One of the things that I like to do, if you don't want to take a gravity sample, one of the things you can generally do is, you'll see fermentation. If you're very observant, you watch the flow of bubbles. You see your fermentation is bubbling at a certain rate. It starts to increase, and it's rapidly, and then it's chugging away at your top speed. And then you'll notice it starts to taper off. That point where it tapers off, that's pretty much two-thirds of the way through. And you could go ahead and call that the remaining third. And I think that that's close enough. The point of it, of raising the temperature during that final third, is to keep the yeast active anyways. That's the point, is you want to keep them going. And as you see fermentation start to drop off, that's the point. You want them to not drop off. You want them to keep going. So you don't necessarily have to measure it and be that precise, but instead look for that slowdown of fermentation, start knocking the temperature up there. Anything to add to that, John?
Nope, you nailed that.
And that's what she said. Oh, speaking of nailing things, you could go to Adam and Eve and get your nailing goods together. Adam Eve's determined to help you spice things up in the bedroom, and they're backing that up with this special offer. If you go to AdamEve.com, use the offer code Jamel, J-A-M-I-L, and you're going to get 50% almost any one item when you enter the offer code. That in itself is a good deal, but when you enter the offer code Jamel, you are going to get their Big O kit for free. The Big O kit is their exclusive Climax gel and a mini vibrator. So now you've got a new way to get him or her off. What girl or guy wouldn't love that? You also get your entire order sent for free. So hurry up. Go to adamandeve.com. Use the offer code Jamel. You're going to get 50% off just about any one item. You're going to get the free Big O kit, and you get free shipping all for that. Good people at adamandeve.com. And been a longtime supporter, so check them out for all your nailing needs.
What about the meet and greet with me?
Meet and greet, yes. And you could enter to win a special meet and greet with pornographic Dildo Steven star of Texas Crack Wrangler by purchasing something at Adam and Eve.
It's cheaper if you do a group.
You get a group meet and greet. Yes. That sounds special. All right. Good show. I think we'll have to get together and do this again sometime, John.
I think we will. Yeah.
All right. If you want to keep hearing us do these shows, I don't know what's wrong with you, but there's the way to keep it going is to contact our fine sponsors and support them, especially ones like John Blickman at Blickman Engineering, because he's been paying for the show longer than anybody and paying more for the show, so you're getting it for free. So you got to email him at feedback@blickmanengineering.com. Tell him how much you appreciate it if you want to see this continue to go. You can also check out the Brewing Network store, thebrewingnetwork.com/store. There's goodies in there like hats, hoodies, glassware. No glassware anymore. Evo's not paying any attention. All sorts of stuff in there that when you buy anything in there, it goes directly to the bottom line of the Brewing Network and helps keep shows like this on the air. Until then, everybody, brew strong.
Brew strong.